Welcome to the Modern Yogi Podcast. An exploration of ancient wisdom.
Hello, hello, everyone.
Welcome back. We are on episode number
120.
Nice. Welcome back to the Modern Yogi Podcast. We are on chapter 15 of the Bhagavad Gita, text number 7. Mm-hmm. All right, who wants to do a quick recap?
Krishna was like, yo, I'm the light in planets. Yo.
He's like, my house is always lit.
Yeah. Right? Yes.
And then please don't surround yourself with fake people, fake things, and fake status.
This material world is filled with suffering. And basically, we want to always keep an eye on what is the bigger goal. And every day we should think, what can I do to support my journey to that ultimate destination?
Yeah, not get attached to the material lust. Like, don't get like caught up in the material lust that is inevitable, but also like, We have some independence to make those choices.
Yeah. And I think inner healing is very important. I think that's where we discuss inner healing. Because if you're chasing some sort of like love or validation, then there's got to be other things that happen in your life where you're missing that. And so you need to do some self-awareness, some healing, some therapy, in addition to developing that relationship with Krishna.
100%. Did you say some love... Never mind.
Some
for chasing love
and admiration. That's what you said. Yeah. I heard love or admiration, and I was like, "What are we talking about?" But then you can be seeking love from Krishna, and then, anyways, I was confused.
Yeah, go to therapy. Not you. Just in general.
Yeah, whatever. Just get in therapy.
What are you talking about?
In general. That's hilarious. I was like, I think it's important because remember you mentioned something where you're like,
that's great timing.
Where you're like, go to the therapy. Sorry. Not in general. Everybody should be talking through their vulnerabilities and where we're falling back on things. But I think you mentioned something where like devotees always do say dumb stuff where they like are making fun of someone or they're racist or someone and they're like, oh, it's fine. It's because I'm a devotee. It's fine. You know, and you can't do that. You have to heal and also develop your relationship with Krishna. Absolutely. And be nice to everybody around you.
That's part of being a devotee. Yes.
Yep.
Nice. No, I think we hit it all.
Perfect.
All right. Nailed it. Racism. Go to therapy. All right.
Go to therapy.
All right. The invocation, please, ladies.
Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Translation. I was born in the darkest ignorance and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto them. All right. Chapter 15, text number 7.
Priyadarshini.
Krishna is still speaking, and he says, the living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the 6 senses, which include the mind.
The mind.
What are the senses? There's 6.
Asta.
touch.
Yeah. Chamli.
Sense. Eyes. Vision. Oh my gosh.
It's hard on the spot.
Put me on the spot and I forgot everything.
Looking, smelling.
So speaking.
Speak. Tongue. Tongue is a sense, right?
Yeah.
Smell.
Smell.
Hearing.
Sight.
Hearing. Are we having a stroke? Why is this so hard for us right now?
I mean, I said senses.
One of the 5 senses.
Senses.
Oh, that's good. I think we got it, right?
We nailed it.
So the 5 senses that we learned in kindergarten and then the mind, yeah.
Eyes, nose, ears, mouth.
Touch.
Touch, mind. Mm. Was that right?
Probably.
Sure.
Yeah, sure.
Anyways, moving on.
We're no experts in this matter. We're a book club.
Yes, we are a book club. Right. You know, oh my God. Did I tell you guys this? Went to a retreat. And
say more.
I think I mentioned it in some previous episodes. But anyways, I went to a retreat and we did like a little trivia night. And it was like they had pop culture moments. They had Gita, like everything, right? And when the Gita category came up, my team was like, they all just looked at me and they're like, you go. And I was like, excuse me. And they're like, you have a podcast. And I was like, you've never listened, because if you listen, you know, I am no expert. I am just in a book club.
I'm just a girl. Get off my back.
I'm just a girl.
I'm just a girl.
I just don't know.
That's so funny.
It was scary moment.
So we know our
to
senses.
To be put in the spot. Anyways, yeah. Yes.
What are the five senses? Senses!
I just don't know what happened.
That was great. It's a lot. It's a lot to be put on the spot.
Anyways.
So the first part of this, right? The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Essentially, we are all part of Krishna, right? Krishna is the ocean. Mm-hmm. We're a drop of that ocean. Yep. We've done that, right? Yep. We know this whole
thing. We've already gone through that.
We've gone through this.
I think one of the main things I liked about this purport was Prabhupada was saying, as fragmental parts and parcels of Krishna, we also have fragmental portions of his qualities. And I think we've mentioned this briefly before, but it's just like good to know. Like, just like we get angry, Krishna gets angry. Just like we get jealous, Krishna gets jealous. Like, all of these qualities that we have, we cannot have them unless he has them, because we are parts of him.
Yeah. Interesting.
Right? Krishna is a foodie. People are foodies. Yeah. You know, like that's, we derive everything from Krishna.
Interesting.
Yeah. And it says one of these qualities that we derive from Krishna, a fragmental portion of his qualities, right? Because just like you were saying, we're a drop. We're not the ocean itself, right? So one of these portions is that we are independent.
Right.
And this is going to come really into play in the next couple of verses, because this idea of independence, what does that mean to be independent?
Right. Exactly. And Prabhupada says, kind of when we misuse this small independence we have, that's when we become conditioned souls. But by the proper use of our independence, we're always liberated. So it's interesting because the purport begins delineating the positives. It's like, do you want the good or the bad first? The good is we have beautiful qualities that come from the Supreme himself. But the bad part is, okay, we're bound up as if shackled by iron chains. And we're bound up by what? By our false ego, the senses, and the mind is the chief agent, which is driving us in this material existence. So Prabhupada says, when the mind is in the mode of goodness, our activities are good. When the mind is in ignorance, ignorant activities, and you know, so forth like that. So the mind dictates a lot of our experiences. So then what do we do? How do we navigate that?
Yeah. And I think like that idea of that first phrase you share, Shyamali, by misuse of that independence, one becomes conditioned. Like when I think about that in a everyday example, right? What is a misuse of our independence? So we have free will, we have choice, and every day we're making choices. And what's a bad choice?
Cocaine.
How about a not such an extreme?
Oh, okay.
A more relatable everyday person.
You run a
person.
Red light. Oh, sorry.
Sure. No, that's fine. Sure. You run a red light and... Why are you looking at us like that?
Wait, are you talking about a mistake that people make?
Yeah, a misuse of your independence.
Okay. It's the way you repeated the teacher. I'm talking about a misuse. Open your ears. A misuse of your independence.
I'm like, I don't know how to say that in any other way.
I saw the teacher and I felt it too.
We're talking about a misuse of independence. Children, get it together. misuse of independence.
Okay, I have an example. I knew someone. Well, it's just choices. Choices we make. I don't know if I should share everything.
Yeah, you should share.
You should go for it.
Say names.
No, I will not say name. I knew someone who...
She will know you're talking about her.
It's not a woman.
He will.
Why would I say gender? That's so... You see, I already messed up.
I assumed that was
anyways,
my bad.
They, them.
And maybe it was a dog.
Okay.
It might have been a dog.
I'm going to talk about this like... person was a dog.
Okay.
I'm so sorry, Krishna. I don't know what I'm doing here. Anyways, so there's a dog, and this is a vegetarian dog.
Okay.
But the dog is vegetarian because their whole life, the family was vegetarian, and that's why the dog is vegetarian.
Yeah.
And one day the dog was like, you know, that's a really famous restaurant, and all they serve is meat, but that's a really famous chef, and I have an opportunity of going there. I think I should try it.
Oh, snap.
Right?
That's a big one.
And so the dog's like, you know what? I'm just going to try it. And then they share the story with me, and it's like, it's not a big deal. Just that's a choice I made. I'm vegetarian, but like, you know, those are choices I will make if certain circumstances are there. And
in my mind, I was like,
you know? Did the dog go through an existential crisis?
No.
Or no, they were chill.
They were chill.
Wow.
But that is free will, right?
Uh-huh. Right.
The
right.
choice to eat. And let's just, for the sake of this silly story, to say that the dog ate dog. You know?
Another
human ate another human?
No. The dog ate another dog?
No, just to make it grave, because it's not grave if a dog eats meat, guys. You understand the reality of that.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
What are we talking about now?
So the human ate another human?
No, they didn't.
They
were vegetarians who broke their diet, and they were just kind of like, well, this was a famous chef, so of course I had to try it.
Oh, as if a dog were to eat another dog. Yeah, I understand.
I know.
A misuse of?
Independence. Minute independence.
In the sense that in that moment, we maybe follow the senses rather than considering the suffering of others. Right. Or
that story
principles.
Was the best.
So honestly, that was so confusing, and I'm so sorry.
That's okay. That's okay.
But like, do you understand the gist of like, we have choice, and some choices maybe are self-harming, some choices harm others, you know?
Right.
Maybe someone running a stop sign, right, could affect a lot of people's lives.
Mm. But you know, your story actually relates to the next part of this verse, right?
Okay,
due
let's go with
to
that.
Conditioned life, they, okay, so remember, Krishna's saying the living entities are in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Good. We got this. Okay. The next part, due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. Now, in your story, that dog was struggling with the sense of taste,
mm-hmm.
right? Because once we can't control these senses, and Krishna knows because Krishna made us, and Krishna is literally saying all of the things that I created are struggling with these six senses.
Mm-hmm.
And that I don't know how to end that sentence. But.
No, but I get what you're saying. And I think that person, we're just going to just say it straight. That person also was struggling with the mind in the sense of like, well, you know, rationalizing. Well, you know, it's a very famous chef. I have an opportunity. I wouldn't have this opportunity any other time. I'm not going to do this again. So let me just, you know, this curiosity, maybe it will be, you know, and that's something that we all experience to some small degree or great degree. Of how we act, whether it's like a teenager shoplifting something.
Mm.
Oh, it doesn't matter. It's a big store. If I take something really tiny, who's really going to notice?
Mm.
These are all actions of independence that we take that bind us further to this material right. world.
Interesting. Yeah.
Here's what I think of, because those stories make me think of we all have the inner light and the inner darkness, and our actions, and with our minute free will, we choose which one to feed. Like Radhanath Swami gives the example of, speaking of dogs, I think he says the light dog
dogs,
and the
yeah.
black dog,
yeah.
right? And they both exist within all of us. And sometimes we're going to have to feed both. And we just hope to feed more one. And eventually the light will take over and the darkness will weaken. And, you know, I think this is a fitting moment to share. I just saw a really nice visual that shows using this text 7, how to see our inner darkness and see beyond the inner darkness.
Mm.
So, and you guys can pause if it's not clear because I have the visual in front. Basically imagine like three different options. On one hand, we deny the presence of our dark desires, and that leads to self-destruction, ambush, like things that bring us down because we're denying, repressing, and ultimately it'll explode in our face.
Mm-hmm.
So that's on one end of the spectrum.
Would that be like avoidance?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. It could be avoidance.
Denial.
Suppression.
Like,
okay.
Oh my God. And we're making almost like bigger deal of the darkness that lies within all of us. And through denying its existence, the monster becomes bigger and bigger,
mm-hmm.
you know,
okay.
That's on one end. On the other end, we could equate our essence with our dark desires. So we're not denying it, but we let that become our whole
this
being.
This is who I am.
This is who I am. And it leads, again, self-destruction through abandonment, through different things. So on that end, it's like you're acknowledging it, but you're making it to be everything. You're making the dark side of the moon to be the whole orb. And then in the middle, we acknowledge the dark desires in our mind and focus instead on our pure spiritual essence, and that leads to self-transformation. So the person who wrote that, and it was specifically about text 7, says that the Bhagavad Gita offers a balanced perspective to navigate these two extremes, because it explains that dark desire stems from different impressions that are embedded in our mind, and these impressions act as internal triggers that fuel different destructive tendencies. So we talked how important it is about therapy, doing the work, in addition to chanting and all of these spiritual activities that we talk about. So beyond our mind lies our spiritual essence, lies our soul, which this text is saying it's eternally pure, part and parcel of the divine. So the final portion this person writes is, by identifying more and more with our spiritual essence rather than our mind, we can rise beyond the lower desires. And then when we anchor ourselves in the all-attractive divine Krishna, it empowers us to reject and reform the darkness within and manifest our divine potential by connecting to our spiritual identity. So I thought that was a really nice, very practical recap of text 7.
That sounded to me like straight up out of therapy. Like that was talking about trauma avoidance, almost like self-denial of who you could be by adopting a darker perception of yourself. You know, like, or allowing yourself to be more than this, that darker perception of yourself that you might have.
Right.
Like, and all through the Bhagavad Gita, that was really cool.
Yeah.
That was really fascinating.
Is the Gita like a therapy manual?
Oh, I like this.
It definitely is. And I just think it's like, it's, there's just so much knowledge, right? So that's why it's so helpful to have these book clubs to try to process and like, try to not just see the words and parrot them back, but really try to understand, how do they apply to me? Like, what am I avoiding? And like, how can Krishna consciousness help me get out of that avoidance and acceptance of who I am and how I can contribute to my spiritual endeavors and my society and my community, myself, my, you know, my, my internal well-being and everything else, right?
Yeah.
To make it personal. I think a lot of people like, understand it to some degree, receive it, and then they parrot it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But it's got to be a personal experience.
And it has to be absorbed.
Because you know what? My mom was the one that actually shared with me this illustration she found. I would share who drew it if I don't know at this moment. But when I reread the text after seeing this illustration, I was like, oh my gosh, So it's so easy for, even for us, we read it and it's like, okay, I don't know, how deep is it going? We might, okay, this verse, identity, blah, 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 the mind, sure, anchors us. All right, next. But okay, wait, what does that even mean? So that's why it's so nice to have this platform as a sounding board to really be able to digest the information deeper.
Yeah, and I think absorption is like the key, right? Like really absorbing what Krishna's saying. And so if we take a look at this verse and apply it to our lives, it's like, what senses are we struggling with, right? Like for me, I know the mind for sure. That's definitely the sixth one, definitely a hard one. And then like, okay, sight, taste. I think taste is another thing that I struggle with, similar to that dog in your story, right? Where it's like controlling that and making sure to eat right things and things that are good for me and things that are in the mode of goodness. And I think that sight and like wanting to consume things with my eyes is another thing that I struggle with. And so like, it's actually, this is the first time that I've stopped to think about, okay, like what senses do I have more control over? And what senses do I need to retain more control over?
I think also, we're struggling with these six senses, but they extend to not just like food and sight and listening and all of that, but like the extent to desires that we ultimately have. Like, I'm trying to figure it out because when I think about it, like personally, my eyes are my greatest sense enjoyment tool. I like, I'm not a foodie. Like I can enjoy food, but it's not something I seek. Music is fine.
You like listening to kirtan and stuff though.
I like listening to kirtan.
I feel like your ears are mostly in the mode of goodness.
But not really, because then it comes to like shows and other things. I'm also hearing those things.
Fair, that's fair. I think those are connected.
Yeah, media is like more of the, my sense attachment. But I think if I think about like the ways in which I could show up better as a devotee in my community or all of that, it's like slightly removed from the senses, right? It might be. Way? I don't know. That's what I'm trying to figure it out. It's whenever you were giving the examples of this illustration, I was thinking about like, what are people struggling with that might get in their way of their Krishna consciousness? And it's not always like, oh, I watch too many shows, or like, oh, I like really enjoy eating. It sometimes is a lot deeper than that. And it aligns more with the illustration that you were talking about, right? Mm. So it could be like self-perception. If I think I'm not good enough, then I might never do this podcast, or I might never put myself in a situation where I'm engaging with Krishna because maybe I don't think I'm good enough and I should just avoid it all. Right. I should avoid people. I should avoid everything. And where does...
Isn't that the mind though?
I think that is the mind. Yeah. And that's what Prabhupada says here. The bound up by false ego, and the mind is the chief agent, which is driving him in material existence. So I think it is false ego fueled by the mind.
Yes, that's good. That's good that you guys connected it. Because I was thinking like, we are always talking about like sight and smell and taste and touch, and I can see how those are true, but I think a lot of people nowadays are more affected by the mind than they are by the other senses.
Yeah.
And I was trying to figure out how to put that together.
But like, when we have problems with the mind and not being able to control the mind, it delineates. I'm starting to use that word.
Nice.
I think, I don't know if I'm using the right context, but perfect. It delineates it down to all of the senses.
It trickles into them. Absolutely.
Because even avoidance. So like, even if you're feeling some self-worth issue or whatever it might be, and then your mind is the one that's struggling, you might say, I'm going to avoid everything. I just want to eat because eating makes me feel good. Like, it goes to the senses anyway. So it might be like, I'm just going to watch TV all day. I'm so tired. I'm just going to listen to music because I just want to cry.
Yeah.
Like all of these things are actually gates. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I've been binge watching a lot of shows because I've been like the cup overflowing, you know, imagery, totally overwhelmed, too much stuff. So I'm dissociations to credit. I've been watching a lot of shows.
We all have different coping mechanisms.
When I brought up, in the last episode of a show I just watched last night, binging has been shows, eyes. But I agree with, it's not just the eyes, because it's not like I know that, oh my God, I love these shows. That's not the problem.
Can't stop watching them. No, it's a mind thing.
I'm overwhelmed. I'm dealing with a lot of heavy stuff. So I'm kind of like, and I'm aware of what I'm doing now, but I'm diving into, I'd rather worry about Harvey Specter's problems on Suits than
it's like the reason why, and it's not as harsh, but it's the reason why we want to escape, because material life is hard. Again, Maya doesn't take a day off. And so like literally we are inundated with all of this. And so we try to disassociate with, it can be drugs and alcohol, but it can also be binging. Yeah. It can also be eating. It can also be listening to music. It can also be just like avoiding people. It can be so many things to help us, or what we think will, but just help us escape from the harshness of life sometimes.
Yeah. And I think one thought that's nice to bring up here, it's like, if you're listening to this, we all also have our own struggles and things. And it's just, I think awareness is a nice step, you know, being gentle to yourself that if you are struggling with different things, and let's say for me now I'm binge watching, I know that's not ideal. I know like I should be grasping on to the Maha Mantra even deeper, which there I put kirtans, and that's very soothing also. But I think it's all part of the human experience. We're going to feel different highs and lows. And as long as this philosophy, it provides a safety net that we are aware what is the ultimate goal. So as I'm binge watching my shows, I know that's not the ultimate goal of life and the reality, but it's like, okay, it's okay. Yeah. This is part of the human experience.
Yeah.
I'm going to get through this one foot in front of the other, and lighter days will come. And then my rounds might increase in quality and et cetera, fall into place then.
It's a realistic perception of life. Like we will have minutes, days, moments of struggle, and to be kind to ourselves is important. And also I was thinking about this, like some of my favorite moments in this journey so far that we've had for the podcast are when we get like the snippets of like what it would be like to see Krishna, right? Those were like some of our sweetest. We were so excited and happy. Like when we were reading about like Arjuna's emotions of seeing the universal form, that will never escape my mind. That feeling that I got from reading that, it makes me want to cry right now.
I don't know what's happening right now.
But I think it is also helpful to dive into the beautiful things of life and the beautiful things of this philosophy we have. And so, you know, to think about, like Prabhupada says here, it is stated that when a living entity gives up this material embodiment and enters into the spiritual world, he revives his spiritual body and is, and in his spiritual body, he can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. And he can hear and speak to him, and he can understand him as he is.
Yeah.
Right. And like, even that, that's a sweet description, something to like, you know, something to look forward to, something to aspire to, something to remember that brings us hope that things will be better. Things will get okay. We'll be, you know, we'll get better.
We'll get okay we'll one get day.
Okay. We'll get okay
it's
one day.
It's gonna be worse. No wording.
It's not fine. It's just okay.
But yeah.
No, I think you're right. And I think it goes back to what Radhanath Swami was saying about what dogs you're feeding, right? And it's just like, it's like the senses are hard and the mind is hard. But if we can balance it out with Krishna conscious things, that will make it easier. They'll make this journey easier. Like putting on kirtan or doing service with your hands or like tasting prashad or like it'll balance it.
And I think, Priya, as you brought up that really special moment we had when we were imagining Arjuna's emotions, I don't know, I got chills and kind of watery eyed because it's just kind of like, life can be so hard. And when we think to those really beautiful, pure moments that like you can really imagine what it would be like to see Krishna face to face, it's almost like coming home after a long, difficult journey where you're just tired. And then it's kind of like Krishna's like, I've been waiting for you.
I got
and
you.
I got you. And I've been going through this process with you. He's not aloof from it. He's totally with us, going through the journey with us also.
And he literally understands the struggle because that's what he said. He said, my living entities are struggling with the very hard six senses. Like he knows our struggle. This struggle is very real.
So, you know, we just got to, again, keep swimming.
Just keep swimming. Just keep swimming.
And every time I think of that, I think of Vaisheshika Maharaj because he brought it up in a class.
What context? What do you think
I think it was along the similar lines, but it was so long ago. I just always, every time I hear just keep swimming, I think of him. So I just, an association in my mind.
Anything else from the purport of text 7?
I think I'm good.
Cool. Text number 8.
Shamali.
Oh, wow. Cool. Okay.
Shamali, just like, no, it's me.
Isn't it me?
You just read that.
I have no idea.
Nah, bro.
Oh, sorry. No,
she right.
That was me.
It's you.
I'm not used to getting to 3 texts. I was like, so snap.
You got this. Text 8.
All good. Krishna says, the living entity in the material world carries his different conceptions of life from one body to another as the air carries aromas. Thus, he takes one kind of body and again quits to take another. Okay, we kind of know this, right? The living entity in the material world carries his different conceptions of life from one body to another.
What does conceptions of life mean in this sense to you? Guys?
Well, like, I think... Oh, sorry.
No. I get the idea of going from one body to another, but I'm not sure what the specific conception of life...
Yeah, why he worded it that way.
Yeah, like is there something specific that he means by that?
Well, I think maybe he's referring to based on our... you know, we transmigrate from one body to another and our present body and present activities are the background of the next body. So our current conception, where our subtle body is, where our consciousness, our senses, that'll determine and carry over into the next body.
Yeah. Prabhupada says that he can, if he likes, if someone, a living entity likes, he can change his body to a higher grade. And if he likes, he can change it to a lower grade. So he carries with him this different conceptions.
It's so funny. When you read that, Shama, I was imagining almost like at the beginning of life, you're like, do you want a lower class body or a higher class body? And everyone would choose probably a higher class one. Yet our actions don't line up sometimes with what we really want, you know?
Yeah. It's hard to...
It's really hard.
To show what we want, like in a consistent manner.
Yeah.
And the change of his body, the change his body undergoes depends on him. So it literally depends on us. Like the things that we desire... in this lifetime that will literally translate into the body that we'll receive.
Right.
So you guys are saying that conceptions of life, like, okay, the way I see it is like conception of life, meaning like what you think your life is. Like, so for example, Shama Sangeeta right now is a podcaster, a comedian, like that conception of life gets transferred to another body.
Conceptions of like, I think it also entails desires too.
I think it's everything, right?
Yeah. Just a combination of
desires, whatever particles are floating in the air of our existence.
Like essence, the essence, of the person.
Our sun scars, our impressions, everything that comes with us just as the air carries around us.
Because that's not who we are, but that is still part of what comes with us.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Okay, okay, okay. That makes sense
to me. We still need to learn what we have learned, like all of that.
Cool.
The whole shebang.
The whole shebang. Yeah. So it comes back to what we do with our minute independence. Mm-hmm.
Thus, he takes one kind of body and again quits to take another.
Right.
Yeah.
By the time of death, the consciousness he has created will carry him on to the next type of body.
That's the big one, right? So at the time of death, right? I think we've talked about this sometimes on the podcast where it's like, if you're super attached to your puppy and you think of your puppy at the time of death, like this is literally like, is it saying clearly that you will have a puppy body in your next lifetime if that is what you think about at the time of death?
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're attached to your puppy, not just puppies, you might just have a life attached to that soul. I think karma is complicated. I don't know if it's that straightforward, right?
I think, yeah, it's more like...
No, but there is a verse in the Gita that Krishna says that when you quit your body, whatever you think of, that's the bot. I'm paraphrasing.
Well, obviously. No, yeah, it's that there's a story of the deer and the sage that got attached to the deer and then became a deer in the next life. So definitely, yes.
But
so
I think it has
you
to
could
do,
become a puppy.
Yeah, because it has to do with our level of consciousness. Because Prabhupada, even in this purport, says if we made our consciousness like that of a cat or dog, then we will acquire that body. So like, what, like each animal, their body is a vehicle that contains a certain level of consciousness that it kind of caps off at that level. You know?
But I feel like there's that and there's also whatever you
think about
at the end of your life. And
so it's very nuanced.
Yeah, but I definitely think it's nuanced because like I think, Shama, like the ideal goal, right? The ideal perspective of Krishna consciousness is that if you're working your whole life in service of Krishna, you will get very attached to Krishna and the thought of your puppy will not come to you at the very end. Like
that's the ideal situation.
Yeah. Mm.
That is amazing.
But also the ideal is that if you are sincere enough, Krishna will give you mercy. And let's say you don't die at an old age, but you actually die at a younger age. If you are sincere, Krishna will remind you of him in your last moments. Like mercy is still a factor in all of this.
That would be ideal again.
That would be
ideal. Ideal. But that also does require a lifetime of dedication and hard work and building that relationship with Krishna.
Yes.
Because I do believe that I don't think there's a loop. Like, you know how I love loopholes? I don't think there's a death loophole that I can, you know, right? Like, I have to spend my entire life thinking about Krishna and doing service and building that relationship. And then, you know, maybe Krishna will be merciful and remind me of him at the time of death.
Right.
But if I'm just like willy-nilly and be like, oh, sometimes I'll remember Krishna. And then I hope to get that same mercy at the end. I don't know if that's likely.
No, but the mercy that you might get is that you will be given an opportunity to be born in a devotee family from the very beginning and already have an advanced
position.
Yeah,
and that's pretty good.
And so Krishna always finds the mercy in giving you like another opportunity. And like, we're just trying our best.
Yeah.
Because don't fear what you might or might not think at the end of your life. You know, like we can only do the best that we can, but knowing that we are trying every day to establish a connection, which is the hard part.
Yeah.
Because every day is a really hard like goal.
I think that's key. You said it and you repeated it about knowing that every day I've tried my sincere best to connect to Krishna, because it makes me think of just last night I had a conversation on the phone. I called, she's like my grandma, Chandravali. She was diagnosed with cancer and we really don't know how much time she has left. So I called her yesterday because her cancer cells have grown and it just, you know, I just felt like my chest tightened up because it's all these little things that really just make you feel like, yeah, how much time she has left, I don't know. So at one point I asked her last night, I was like, how you're always so strong spirited and you don't seem afraid at all. How are you doing it? And her answer had different parts to it. One part was she said, you know, I feel like I've always, nothing has ever come easy. She's always had to push through different struggles from young. But then she said, also not to toot my own horn, but I've done a lot of service. She's dedicated her whole life to worshiping the deities in Dallas. And she was saying, so that makes her, it gives her a sense of confidence in Krishna's there for me because she has dedicated her whole life to Krishna. So she's not going to face death from this fear perspective, but she's looking at it as, you know what? Krishna, I'm going to be able to come with you now in whatever, what I'm adding words to what she said, but wow. In what, wherever her journey will take her, she knows that she's with Krishna and she's totally fine.
She's tried her best.
Yeah. That and is, I said, oh. I was like, well, you're much stronger than I am because, and I was getting all teary eyed because I was like, whenever I think of a world without you, I just can't help but get choked up. And, but when you've dedicated your life to that, you have this sense of deep confidence that I'm with Krishna. Yeah. And so many great saints have said stuff like, my Lord, I'll finally get to see you face to face now. And they look forward to that time.
Well, I also think death is harder on the living.
Yeah.
To just factually, right? Not to say that that moment of death isn't hard, but that the experience of those who live is, you know, longer suffering, you know? Yeah. So, yeah, that's so sweet. Yeah. It's so sweet that she has that perspective.
Like, I desire that for all three of us to like get to a place when we're old, or I don't know how long we're going to live, but like get to a place where you have so much trust that Krishna's got your back because you've put in the work already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh,
that would be amazing. Like, that's such a like a beautiful flex that like she was like, don't worry, I got, like, I'm going to be fine because I know that I put in the work and I know Krishna loves me.
Yeah.
And that is such a beautiful thing.
Oof, yeah. And it was coming from really like from a place of humility in her, not even just like, I'm fine. Like,
I'll be okay.
No, like she really just felt a sense of peace. Like, I'm with Krishna and he's with me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish that for all of us also.
Yeah.
For sure.
It was really sweet. Thank you for sharing that. All right. Anything else before we move on to text 9?
That's it for me. Shamali?
Yeah, no.
All right, Shamali, text 9.
All right. The living entity, thus taking another gross body, obtains a certain type of ear, eye, tongue, nose, and sense of touch. Ah, there are the senses, which are grouped about the mind. He thus enjoys a particular set of sense objects.
Okay, makes sense. So someone is born, they take a body, they get senses.
And they're grouped about the mind. So it's true what you had said, Shama, the mind is kind of trickling down into the senses.
Because
the
delineated.
Senses, delineated. You scholar, you.
I learn from you.
You know, there's I've heard about this from many different sources, but there's like a science of reading faces.
Yeah.
So like portions of your face. So like your face is broken up into 3 portions, forehead, middle of your face, and lower part of your face. And depending if your mouth is bigger, it means something like... They all have different meanings about who you are as a person. And
interesting.
I find it fascinating. I think Krishna designed everything very perfectly, right?
Right,
and slowly people have been trying to figure out what he designed and how it all works, you know?
Right. Like little things, like if someone's eyebrows are a little more tilted up, they look more empathetic. Then if someone's eyebrows are more down, they look a little sassy, or just little things like that.
And it's not just look, like some of these, the scientists, like they can tell, oh, you're a liar by nature. And that's just, you know, who you are. Or like, oh, you're very generous. Like they can tell by features you have.
Interesting.
Right? Because it would take Krishna a really long time to make all these characteristics. I mean, he could, right? To make all these unique characteristics of 7 billion people.
Yeah.
But like he's got a little bit of a blueprint.
Pattern.
Yeah.
Right, he also didn't, you know, do it all. He was like, Brahma, you got this.
Yeah.
I'll give you knowledge.
He delegated. Yeah.
Delegated.
Interesting. So it's like men like with a certain pointy chin have a certain like trait to them, you know, like certain women with giant forehead has a certain trait to them, and they're very interesting.
Super, it's accurate, so it's really interesting just in general.
Yeah, in the purport he says consciousness is originally pure like water, but if we mix water with a certain color, it changes. So similarly, consciousness is pure, for the spirit soul is pure, but the consciousness is changed in association to material qualities, and then we get different body types and senses and all of that.
That makes sense. So originally we're pure, but based on these desires and all of these things, we're given different senses, which, you know, also affect how we move in this world. Mm-hmm. And that how we move in this world also affects what association we have and what qualities we get in our next life. Mm-hmm. If there is a next life.
Everything is connected.
Yes. It's connected. Everything is connected.
Yeah. All right. Text number 10. Wait, anything else?
Yeah, no, that's good.
And I just think it's always interesting to remember how many billions of or millions of species there are. And out of all those species, like you've said something similar, Priya, from your course, we got to be here in this form where we got to come into contact with this philosophy, and we're sitting here on a podcast talking together.
Yeah. 8,400,000 species.
It's very rare to be human. It's very rare to find the Modern Yogi podcast. So kudos to you. If you're listening, you're doing something good out there.
Yeah.
Woo.
It was even rare for us to find the Modern Yogi podcast.
It was.
One Canadian, one, you know, South American, one Texan, like all came together in California to do this.
Yeah.
What are the chances? Krishna.
Krishna. All right.
Text 10. The foolish cannot understand how a living entity can quit his body, nor can they understand what sort of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature. But one whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see all of this.
Makes sense, right? Because everyone can like look at like, you know, people being born in certain circumstances and be like, oh man, it's God is so unfair. Or like someone is born into opulence or they're born into poverty and like, yeah, it's sad. But then if you truly understand the knowledge and karma and why bad things happen to good people and like how that works, then you actually understand why people get the bodies that they get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that phrase they use. The eyes are trained in knowledge. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, we can see the truth with the eyes of knowledge by reading these sacred texts like the Bhagavad Gita. It trains our eyes to see the knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the first part of that text says the foolish cannot understand how a living entity can quit this body, his body. And I think that's just, I was trying to process that myself. And I think it was what I came to a conclusion is that someone like that same question that you had, people don't understand, like, why do children die? Why, like, how does that happen? Like, what happens afterwards? Mm. Like all of those questions, right? I think that's what Krishna is alluding to. Yeah.
Mm.
And so Prabhupada says, a person in such knowledge can understand how the conditioned living entity is suffering in this material existence. Mm. But those who are highly developed in Krishna consciousness try their best to give this knowledge to the people in general, for their conditioned life is very much troublesome.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that interesting in a different sense. Like, I feel like I've said this before. I always felt slightly overwhelmed by the thought of preaching.
Mm.
And as I've gotten older and I've my brain fully developed, I realized like anything that we really are interested in, we share with others.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I found this great candy that I really want you to taste. Like, you have to try it. You're going to love it.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so when we really understand the philosophy and we really understand how we're all suffering and how it's really helpful and it gives light in moments of darkness, right? Then we're like, okay, like, other people need to know this too, you know, so it, you know, eventually it clicked and I understand, wow, we have so much knowledge and everyone should have all the knowledge so they can make all the decisions.
Yeah. That's a nice perspective because it takes you out of the like, oh, look at what I've come up with versus like, no, I found this little gem. Let me share it with you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I had someone, I think I said this before too, but someone said, and if someone doesn't want it, that's okay. Because if you recommended someone a candy and they're like, oh, I don't eat sugar right now. That's okay. Or whatever. Maybe candy's not the right example, but it is okay for someone to not be ready to hear this, or, you know, it's not their time or whatever it might be. Right. Just, it's just a recommendation from a loving place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you're trained in knowledge, then you know that person is either not their karma to receive that knowledge or that candy at that time, you know?
Exactly.
And at that time is key because every little thing plants a seed, you know? Then the next time they might be like, oh yeah, that girl Priya or whatever said this to me years ago. Oh, this is what she was talking about. And it clicks. It all plants seeds.
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely. I've met so many people randomly in my life whom it felt like we were meant to meet. Like they were like, oh, your name is Indian, but you're Hispanic. How does that? And I was like, oh, well, my parents are Hare Krishnas. Oh, Hare Krishnas. I met Prabhupada when I was younger. And I'm like, and this was someone at the university where I worked. And it was just, you know, like,
that's really cool.
And it's just like, it's so fascinating how we're all interconnected in one way or another. And some, you know, so just
absolutely
fascinating.
It makes you just see how Krishna is totally orchestrating everything with a perfect timing. Like, I go on Japa walks right around my neighborhood. There's Palisades Park there. And sometimes I take a clicker. I've been liking taking my bead bag. But one day I was about to grab the clicker, but I just grabbed the bead bag. And I was walking around with the bead bag. And because of that bead bag, this one boy walked up to me and he's like, Hare Krishna. He points to the bead bag. He's like, I was born in the movement, but I live around here. Kind of like, I think I got the impression he hadn't been in a long time. He kind of fell away. So I just remember walking away thinking, huh, the power of like something visual that someone can see, like maybe that plants the seed of like, Hare Krishna, that's a thing, you know?
Yeah.
And he told me, he's like, hey, if you ever do a kirtan around here, let me know. He wanted to kind of hear more about it.
That's I love that.
I just remember thinking, huh?
That's amazing.
Yeah. Krishna incorporates all of us as little instruments to reach. He has a timing for everyone, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
All right.
Okay. One more?
Yeah, text 11.
Okay. Who is next?
Who's speaking?
Who is speaking?
Oh, Shamasangita.
Is it?
I just, yes.
All right, Krishna says, the endeavoring transcendentalists who are situated in self-realization can see all this clearly. But those whose minds are not developed and who are not situated in self-realization cannot see what is taking place, though they may try to.
Yeah.
Yep. It's kind of similar to what we just talked about.
The rain has gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Prabhupada is interesting because he says, nowadays there's so many so-called yogis and institutions associated with yoga, but they're actually blind in the matter of self-realization. Like they're just simply addicted. He calls it to some sort of gymnastics exercise and kind of are happy if the body looks good and is well built. But only those who are actually in the yoga system have realized the self, the world, and the Supreme Lord. In other words, bhakti yogis, they can understand what's actually happening around us.
Yeah. And when I think about that and I break it down to like everyday life, I think about people who, you know, I'll try to keep it simple, but the Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Yeah.
So some people are just fundamentally trying to survive and they maybe just don't have the capacity to even consider why do bad things happen to good people, right? Like they're just like, I need to survive and that's what I need. And so it's not a matter of looking down on anyone, but rather understanding that like the knowledge and the need for knowledge, you know, comes all at the right time. And sometimes we got to take care of those needs first and then things will evolve from there. And, you know, and we are in a fortunate position to have more knowledge that helps us cope with everyday life.
Yeah.
Right. Well, anything else?
That's all.
Okay.
Yeah, all right. Well, please join us next time as we tackle chapter 15, text number 12.
See you next time.
Bye-bye. Hello, beautiful souls. If you like what you're hearing, please follow us on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast.
And if you love what you're hearing, please make sure to share a link to our podcast at Modern Yogi Podcast with all your friends, families, and long-lost cousins.
And if you have any questions at all, send us a DM on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast, and we'll be sure to get back to you.
Thank you for listening to
The Modern Yogi.